Okay, so our first delegation is from Jeff Wheeldon. As a member of the public, Mr. Wheeldon, Councillor Wheeldon. We are in the process of getting an RFP out for new microphones, just so everybody knows.
Thank you, Warden. Thank you all, councillors, for allowing me to speak today. I also want to thank everyone who wrote in sharing their experiences and spoke last night, although I wasn't there. And I want to unequivocally say that nobody should feel afraid in their own town, whether in their home or their place of work. This is not the experience of community that we, not just here in Coburg, but across Northumberland, strive to create. As a former board member at Transition House, I'm very familiar with the concerns raised in the correspondence. I've spent time over the years talking with neighbors, social workers, staff, and politicians. I'm conscious that many residents feel that their concerns have not been heard or that nothing is being done. So I want to say from the outset that politicians and staff are often like ducks. You don't see how fast our little legs are moving under the water. The problems we're trying to solve are complex and multifaceted, and sometimes the things that we do to help can take a long time to make a difference. Often, they also have unintended consequences, so things appear to get worse before they get better as we continue to adapt best practices in an ever-changing environment. That can make it extremely difficult for all of us, particularly politicians and residents, to interpret what we see. I also want to make it clear to residents that staff see everything that you see and much, much more. Sometimes I hear from residents who feel that staff dismiss their concerns about things like intimidation and safety, and I want to make it clear that staff experience those threats much more directly and on a regular basis, so they get it and they hear it. But further, staff increasingly face abuse and social attacks from residents who are angry about the state of the situation. It's frankly miraculous we retain any of our staff. Their work can already be exhausting and traumatizing as they work with people who are experiencing daily traumas of their own. But when the political climate of the community is so hot on the issue that they fear reprisal for doing the very jobs we've hired them to do, that's unacceptable. We hire them for their expertise, which comes from training and experience that none of us have. And I ask that this council go out of your way to support them. They need to know that when they do their jobs and make their recommendations, their work will be respected and they'll be shielded from political blowback. Because the narrative that I read in many of the letters that have been presented is one that shows an understandable lack of knowledge on the issue in broader context. Without that context, staff recommendations that align with the evidence and best practices will seem unacceptable to residents, as we've seen before. What I see in these letters are very understandable concerns and unacceptable experiences and attempts to interpret them. They almost invariably suggest a sharp increase in negative experiences and associate that increase with Transition House moving from Chapel Street to 310 Division Street. There is certainly a correlation here, whether perceived or actual, but we know that correlation is not causation. The reality is that 310 Division Street is a vast improvement over the Chapel Street house in every way. It provides more private and safer space for shelter users, more opportunity for support services to be offered on site, and more space to bring people out from the cold. It gives people who are experiencing homelessness more reasons to come in and not be out on the street. While there are some people who still find entering any institutional space to be overwhelming or unsafe due to their past experiences, the vast majority of people don't want to be out there on the street. 310 provides them with a room of their own, and yet the letters all talk about the increased visibility of people who are experiencing homelessness out in the street using drugs. Using drugs is not allowed in Transition House and never has been. When someone uses drugs, they get what's called a service restriction, which is to say they get kicked out. The policy is there for really good reasons, but it has unintentional side effects. People who are sleeping out in the community are very likely on a service restriction. The problem is not that the shelter is here, but rather that the people who need the shelter aren't allowed inside. The emergency care establishment bylaw unintentionally intensifies this problem. 24/7 security can follow shelter users when they leave the shelter for up to 500 meters to ensure they aren't using drugs. The challenge for those shelter users who use drugs is that a drug addiction is a physical need, and their drugs are the medicine that keeps them alive. In order to take their medicine, they are required to either hide from security or travel at least half a kilometer out into the community in order to find a place where they won't be seen, putting them far away from help if they overdose, and again, contributing to that visible public drug use. for those already on service restrictions, they might as well just do it in the open because they've already lost their bed for the night or the week or the month. In these ways, we can see it's not the move to 310 Division Street that's led to more visible homelessness and drug use in the community. The new shelter is a demonstrably better place to stay inside. Increases in visible homelessness and drug use around the shelter is a result of the enforcement of the shelter's no drug policy and that intensification under the ECE bylaw. The bylaw has also reduced shelter occupancy and warming room occupancy, which means it's not operating at full capacity. We could see fewer people outside 310 if there were more people allowed to be inside 310. The majority of people who are experiencing chronic homelessness in our community also face the constant challenge of drug addiction. If Transition House were to become a sober living facility, that would exclude almost all of those residents from the supports they need to survive. They will not simply sober up. That's not how addiction works. They also will not disappear. Northumberland is their home. They are residents here like the rest of us. When I first ran for office in Brighton, people asked if I was from there. I said, well, I think that residents of Brighton are residents of Brighton, whether they've lived here for 50 years or 5 minutes. I haven't seen all the details of the staff report. I read it this morning after I wrote this. But policies like this have been tried elsewhere. And we know that visible homelessness and public drug use will increase, not decrease. This has been tried many times for many years. If drug use is a barrier to accessing the other services that people need to find shelter and transition to permanent accommodations and a better life, then it's understandable that people would conclude that drugs are the problem. No drugs, no problem. Unfortunately, that's not how drugs work. We can't wish them away or arrest them away. In the news the other morning, there's a story about 7 inmates overdosing on fentanyl inside a prison. We cannot arrest our way out of this problem either. And we know from decades of evidence that forced drug treatment doesn't work. And it massively undermines the services provided at Transition House, which has many, many success stories that don't seem to get shared around as much as the complaints. Those successes depend on trust. As Councillor Cleveland pointed out this morning, if people fear that they're not even allowed to say where they're from because they might lose access to services, what else do they withhold for fear of losing access to services? We need to be able to establish trust to be able to really help people. So if getting rid of drugs won't solve the problem, because we can't actually get rid of drugs, what else can we do? One option that has been tried successfully in many places is to provide a safe place to do drugs. Safe consumption sites provide people with privacy and support while they take their medicine. They're not a perfect solution for public drug use. There is none. But they're proven to significantly reduce it. Every person who chooses to use drugs inside is one more that isn't seen doing it outside. It's one less overdose on the street, one less service restriction from the shelter. If we want people off the street, they need to be allowed to go somewhere else. And if using drugs keeps them out of the shelter, then they need a place to use drugs. We cannot keep pushing people out of the shelter and then blame the shelter for those people being on the street. Please do what you can to make treatment and support as accessible to residents as possible. Providing more people who are experiencing homelessness with shelter and privacy also provides neighbors with more security and peace. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Wilden. Are there any questions of clarification for the delegation? Councillor Cleveland.
Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Wilden. You said something interesting, and maybe you can expand on it. You said that when you read the letters and the concerns, you see an obvious lack of knowledge. Would you mind elaborating on the lack of knowledge that the residents are sharing?
I did not say that I see a lack of knowledge, but only that I do not expect residents to have the breadth of expertise that our staff do. If they did, we wouldn't need our staff.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wilden. Final question. It's wonderful to suggest that vulnerable individuals in Coburg need a place to go. Do you think it's appropriate that people from your community in Brighton are traveling up to 50 kilometers away to receive services in Coburg? I mean, Brighton could always set up a low barrier facility in its jurisdiction, and we can have that conversation then, sir.
Well, we've had that conversation, Councillor Cleveland, and it comes down to what is the best use of resources in all of Northumberland County. This is a county-level service, and county-level services exist within the county seat. And we have talked about at the table around at the Intermunicipal Task Force on Housing and Homelessness about what would it actually take, because you've raised this before, and so we had that conversation. And it would take a double-digit tax increase in every community in Northumberland to facilitate a new shelter that would not be at the same level as 310. So in terms of the quality of services that we can provide to people who are experiencing homelessness at an acceptable cost to the taxpayer, I think almost everyone around the table agreed that that would be an extreme measure that ultimately, as the report indicates, a majority of people indicate that they are from Coburg. Now, we have one person experiencing visible homelessness in Brighton. And we've had conversations at the Brighton Homelessness Task Force about whether or not even a full-time caseworker in Brighton is justifiable given the low occurrence of high acuity individuals in Brighton. And the reality is that it was deemed to be not a sufficient priority to undermine the existing county services and spread out the budget in a way that to serve a single person, unfortunately.
Follow up.
I appreciate the point. You know, best use of resources, and I guess the question has to be asked: whose best use of resources? Because in Coburg, we are seeing double-digit increases in order to pay for the effects of this shelter. So, and it makes sense that you would only have one individual in Brighton with homelessness because it's policy to be bringing them to Coburg to the giant shelter here, sir. So this is a repetitive pattern. This is the issue. All services are in Coburg, therefore more services should be in Coburg. But more services are in Coburg, so then people come to Coburg. Well, why would we put services elsewhere? Because all the people are in Coburg. Are we seeing the circular argument here, sir?
We could make the same argument, sir, about healthcare, because Brighton does not have a hospital. We could make the same argument about a great many services that the people in Coburg enjoy closer access to. Right. Unless we want to have county seat levels of expenditure in every municipality in Northumberland, I think that we need to be cognizant of the fact that Coburg is the county seat, for better or worse. You get a great many benefits from it and some challenges as well. That is not to say that this is Coburg's problem. This is Northumberland's problem. It is a county level matter, and every municipality in Northumberland has a vested interest in ensuring that this goes well. That's why we have an intermunicipal task force. That's why we're here today around this table instead of just at the Coburg table, because we all care and we all want this to work effectively and efficiently with minimum impacts to residents and the best possible service to people experiencing homelessness. And that's why my recommendations are oriented around how can we actually improve access to the shelter so that your residents are not seeing those people on the street. If they're inside, they're not outside.
Final question, Chair. Go ahead.
Do we not accept the fact that when we build services in Coburg, that it draws people who need those services into Coburg? Are we denying that basic fact that by increasing services, we're increasing more people coming to Coburg?
I'm not denying that fact, but I do believe it's incredibly overstated. And the same is true of any center. You know, when I was in Bible College, I was volunteering on Vancouver's downtown east side. And there are a lot of people there who are from elsewhere. The reality is that a lot of those people were given one-way bus tickets from my hometown because people in that community sought to drive those people out. And they said, wow, they've got services there. Now, that's not those people's fault. That is a political problem. And it comes from communities that would rather see a problem go away than do the hard work and take the risk associated with addressing it humanely. Those policies are no longer acceptable in, you know, this was 20 years ago. We don't get away with that anymore.
We have hit our 5 minutes. Is this the last one? Go ahead.
It's a statement, Warren. That's very easy to say when you have one visible homeless person and the policy exists in Northumberland County. The very policy that Mr. Wheeldon's saying we shouldn't enact is the very one that exists in Northumberland County, where six lower tiers get to send all of their individuals to Coburg. And so that exact policy that Mr. Wheeldon is saying that we shouldn't be doing is the one that's present in Northumberland County at present. And then when I point that out, it's too much and too expensive. So again, we're seeing this, what comes first, the chicken or the egg conversation? And I do appreciate Mr. Wheeldon's presentation today. Thank you,
May
Mr.
I
Wheeldon.
Respond?
I'd rather you not at this stage. Thank you. I appreciate.
Excuse me, I would like him to be able to respond just as Councillor Cleveland has had always the last word. Thank you.
So I'll need a motion that County Council approve extending the question and answer period for Jeff Wheeldon. Delegation for an additional 2 minutes. Councillor Martin, is there a seconder? Deputy Warden, all in favor? Being none opposed, that motion is carried. Mr. Wheeldon.
Thank you, Mayor.
Doesn't matter. You're good.
I do appreciate your perspective, Mayor Cleveland. I just want to say that the question of I'm not from here, and so I have presumably my arguments carry less weight, is the same logic being applied to people who are experiencing homelessness and have no other fixed address. Neither saying whether or not someone is from here doesn't affect the facts of the situation or what has already been shown through decades of research on this issue and attempts to improve communities elsewhere have shown, which is that improving access to shelter that we have is going to be more effective than anything that restricts that access. Now, if we want to have a conversation across Northumberland County about having adequate shelter services in every municipality, I'm here for it. Residents of Brighton know that I'm not afraid to raise their taxes. That said, that's not the conversation that we're having here today. So thank you, Mayor Cleveland.
Thank you both. I will call, and as I do, I will call Amanda DeFalco, Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness. She's coming in virtually. So Senior Director DeFalco, and as you're preparing to come in, just note for interest's sake that the visible person in Brighton, the visible homeless person in Brighton, has been offered services in Cobourg and refuses to take them and continues to live rough in Brighton. And so we continue to, as a county, we continue to endeavor to provide those services remotely. Is that the right word to say? But at a distance. Because certainly it would be easier if the person were to come here and get the services. But of course, we have to meet people where they are, as we often say. Senior Director DeFalco.
Thank you. I was just waiting to be unmuted and on the screen. Good morning, Warden Ostlander, honorable mayors and members of council. My name is Amanda DeFalco, and I'm the Senior Director of Strategy and People with the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness. I worked in the field for over 20 years, leading a housing and homelessness file in an Ontario municipality for most of that time, while advising and representing Canada as a fellow at the Institute of Global Homelessness, and currently with working with over 60 communities across Canada through my work at the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness. I'm here today because of the serious implication on the matter of the proposal to convert 310 Division Street into a sober living environment. I understand firsthand, by working in a municipality myself, the pressures facing this council: rising visible homelessness, community frustration, public safety, and business disruption. These are real issues, and I respect that you're looking for a solution that feels safe, more structured, and responsive. But shifting 310 Division to a sober living environment is not that solution. The proposal assumes a sobriety as a prerequisite for support, but evidence in decades of real community outcomes has revealed that this doesn't actually reduce substance use or homelessness in any community, and instead it makes the problem more visible and harder to manage. Communities across North America, such as yours, are living through and experiencing the very same issues that you're facing here today. At the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness, we're privy to observing the outcomes of council decisions such as the one before you. Those communities who opt for a sober or abstinence-based sheltering model or high restrictions must come to terms with the people not meeting the sobriety requirements, as they will be forced out, as previously mentioned, with nowhere to go other than public spaces, such as alleyways, doors, public parks, or emergency rooms. And that's irrespective of any local bylaw that is implemented. It's uncommon that people will simply relocate to other cities as the cost of moving, their social connections, and available housing are not any better in surrounding communities. That might have been the case about 10 years ago, but that's no longer the case today. Police will be called, emergency services will be stretched, and instead of recovery or stability of community members, the result will be displacement and deterioration of community, both for the individuals that you're trying to serve and the broader community at large. Community citizens will be increasingly frustrated as the problem becomes more visible and the cost against the tax levy continues to increase. We're not suggesting a do-nothing approach. Rather, the alternative is more effective and already being used across Ontario and other communities across Canada, and that's the housing-focused sheltering model. If you look at communities like St. Thomas Elgin, for example, they invested in supportive housing, outreach, housing first programming, and a lower barrier housing focused sheltering model, all coordinated, all evidence-based. As a result, they were able to cut homelessness by 30% and calls to police for drug-related behavior dropped by 67%. While each community has their own contexts, the same results are yielded time and time again as we see this play out in communities across Canada. To give you a further analogy, I'd like to pull from the health sector. For example, there are over 60 different types of breast cancer. However, evidence treatments include mastectomies, lumpectomies, radiation, and chemotherapy, all tailored to treat different contexts of the individual's cancer, not going to non-evidence-based approaches like lobotomies. If COBRA's seeking to reduce homelessness and improve public safety, the path forward must be rooted in an investment in housing-focused programming, housing subsidies and supports, rather than exclusionary programming. I encourage you to look carefully at the lessons and evidence from other communities experiencing the very same challenges as you. We want to support you, to lead with solutions that work both for the individuals you serve and for the citizens that are looking for answers. Thank you for your time and leadership on this issue.
Thank you, Senior Director. I will open the floor to questions of clarification for members of Council. Councillor Cleveland.
Thank you. I really appreciate the presentation. Understanding that you're pulling on lots of experience, lots of other communities, lots of other provinces, my question is, is any of this being taken into consideration under the recent provincial changes of Bill 10, Bill 6, Safer Communities Act? This changes the game for everyone. The new provincial rules are literally, in a sense, going to be charging people $10,000 fine and potential jail time for living rough and or using substances in public. So my question is how can we make assertions about what would happen in the future based on previous experiences if really the ground is being shifted underneath us as we speak in terms of what we can charge, what we can't charge, where people can be put, and what the provincial government is doing? We're also seeing movement at the federal level around this. So my concern is understanding that this is what has happened in the past. Does this sort of analysis take into account that moving forward, there are new powers being given to police and provincial authorities that would change the outcome of a situation in the past?
Thank you, Councillor Cleveland. Senior Director DeFalco, I guess I'll ask if you have any points around that from your perspective without getting into a debate about the policies themselves coming out of the upper levels of government, because I don't want to go down that particular rabbit hole this morning. Thank you. Over to you.
Through the Warden, irrespective of whatever public policies are in place, the execution and implementation of such policies have always existed in communities across North America. For example, local bylaws being implemented against encampments, fines for loitering, fines for panhandling, jail time for such things. That's not anything new that we have seen. It's just merely formalized in a public policy. So through the practice and execution of those policies is what I'm referring to when I'm speaking to my experience and the evidence that has been demonstrated of what the execution of those policies yields to, which is not the outcomes that citizens are looking for.
Thank you. Councillor Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned because there's a massive difference between a bylaw instituted by a lower or upper tier and a provincial government decision, because it's the province that sets JPs. It's the province that decides these things. It's the province that decides if we're even allowed to pass these bylaws. So I guess my concern isn't necessarily a question, but it's that how can we be comparing bylaws to provincial mandates? And the impact of a local bylaw has no effect necessarily on a provincial scope, jailing, JPs, the justice system. But a provincial act does.
And I'm a little concerned that we're not taking that into consideration when we're looking at outcomes moving forward. And we're assuming a lot based on what has happened in the past. But as I've just stated, things are all changed from a provincial level. We're children of the province. And how can we be using what has happened in the past when everything is changing moving forward to not sort of adapt? So there's not a question. I appreciate it. And I do appreciate the presentation. And my final question is, when we're looking at homelessness through your eyes, Director, are you collaborating with like the CCSA, the Canadian Centre for Substance Abuse, who has been very vocal on ensuring that we don't house people in recovery journeys with people who are actively using? How we've learned from the CCSA that in order to support a person's sober journey towards that, which we know is long, arduous, and often multiple times, that the best chances of success are isolation away from active users. How do you sort of wrap your head around that in terms of a home first approach, when we also hear from addiction specialists that actually what's really required is separation to give those individuals the best chance of success?
Senior Director.
Through the warden, there is a multifaceted approach and there is no one size fits all. So what you're referring to and what I'm referring to actually is through the experts and bodies of both mental health and substance use in Canada that would concur that there needs to be a variety of approaches tailored to people's needs and where they're at. So harm reduction is one. Sober living environments is not saying that you shouldn't have a treatment center or that there shouldn't be treatment centers, but it should be up to the individual and where they're at. Low barrier sheltering is also part of that comprehensive modeling in terms of being able to provide the right supports at the right time based on where the person is at in their journey.
Thank you for that. Councillor Cleveland, you have 10 seconds.
No, then I'll pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that. Anyone else with a question of clarification? Thank you, Senior Director DeFalco. We appreciate your time, your information. And before I call the next delegate up, I will note that I had a very long and pleasant conversation with Mayor Patterson from St. Thomas on Thursday last week, talking about their housing first approach. And I think there are lessons to be learned from Elgin County and St. Thomas, and some interesting approaches that I know the Deputy Warden has also communicated here around this horseshoe. So next steps look like next steps. I'm going to move the list around just a little bit because I know Lara Robertson has a dog downstairs. But he also wants to come up, so we'll get you to come up now, do your delegation, and then you can switch out so that your puppy isn't left alone. Larry, could you just push the speaker button in front of you?
Oh, okay, there we go. Thank you, Warden and Councillors, for allowing me to come here and speak today. I was prepared. I didn't realize the meeting was today. I got informed about this last night when I went to the other meeting. Regarding low barrier, it's needed. Not in the area it is, definitely. Very bad place to put a low barrier shelter. But at the same time as having a low barrier shelter, you need a safe consumption site. But at the same time, it also needs to have distinctive, different places for recovery. You have those that are using in low barrier. You also need to have an alternate site that has the high barrier. Me being at 310 destroyed a year and a half of being clean. Going back out on the streets, I've gotten clean again because I'm away from it all. Not something I've broadcast most times in my life. I got clean the first time without any help, and I've done it again this time. But being in 310, the issue... it's a favoritism game in that place. They issue restrictions based on the mood they're in. I got restricted for 7 days, and in that 7 days, they reduced the numbers for the warming room, and I ended up sitting freezing outside all night long because a girl had said I'd hit her. No one reviewed cameras. It did not happen, and she later apologized for having said such a thing. But I still got the punishment. I still ended up has been stuck freezing cold all night long using because staff would not even consider letting me in through the door, even though they knew I'd only gone in for a smoke. It's 310 is an awesome idea, as I said. Bad location, bad combination of levels in there. You need to have something that provides access for people, because my situation as it sits now, I am banned from every municipal park and municipal building in Coburg for having taken cover under the gazebo across the road from weather. No shelter built, nothing, because of the new laws. But Coburg has an overload of this going on. They have no idea what to do. I don't steal. I'm not using. I don't do anything illegal other than sleep where I'm not supposed to. But I will keep doing the chase in my hometown rather than go back to 310 because of how things are run there, how it, you never know what's going to happen. They don't stick to their own rules. They throw out your belongings as soon as you turn your back. And for no reason other than petty grudges from staff. That should not be happening. I had a staff member almost run me over because someone had said something to her which had not been said. She tried to run me over the parking garage. She didn't get anything. No punishment whatsoever except to talking to her about what happened. And security witnessed it happening. Security has no powers there. You guys have approved, I believe it's a $6.5 million budget for security. They're not even allowed to open a door to residents to let them in or out. They're not allowed to help in any way. They're only there to stand around twiddling their thumbs, and most of them are quitting because they aren't able to do anything at all. They're just there in case they're needed to break up a fight. That's their only purpose. You're spending $6.5 million at a low barrier shelter, the security's not allowed to do anything. So what's the point? Do you know how many guns are in that place? Many. But they're carried into the building, but they're not found because it's not a pocket search. It's not safe in there with the way security is. It's not safe for sobriety if you're trying to get clean, but it's a definite needed facility. It just needs to be moved out of the area it is. That is unacceptable. The number of times I picked up dirty foils, dirty rigs, and everything from the corner building, flamboyant. A friend of mine I went to school with years ago has a 4-year-old son there. He plays on the front steps. You need to find either a safe site for everyone to be able to use. It'll take it off the streets, and I know it will. I've seen it in Niagara Falls. I left Coburg after being homeless for a year, after having grown up here, to try and find a home elsewhere because I could not get one here. Did not work. I came home. All I've been told since then is to go back to Niagara Falls. Something's got to be done. I love my hometown. I don't want it messed up. But at the same time, people do need to be taken care of. And the situation as it stands is everyone's just being thrown aside. And that's my opinion on it. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Robertson. We appreciate you providing us with your insights and information. I think it's going to be helpful as we figure out what next steps look like for 310 and other services in the community. Thank you. And I'll get you to
I'll go get my
switch out the babysitter, if you will. And while that happens, we do have Michael Chance Brown, who is listed as a delegation. I'm not sure if he's still in the building. Ms. McDonald's going to check to see if Chance is out there. All right. So our understanding is Chance is not in the building or wishing to delegate this time. So Mr. Scott, if you will, this is Dave Scott for a delegation. Sorry, sir, come on up to the microphone here. And if you push the little wavy microphone button, it will light up green and you can proceed.
All right, so I understand this is about the conditions of 310, right? Yeah. The necessity of 310 is a real thing. However, they do need a lot of work. They need to restaff right from management all the way down. A lot of them don't really seem to know what they're doing, and we need more qualified people in there that do know what they're doing, know what agencies can be used to help people, because it seems that they're all just trying to paint everybody with the same colored brush, and we are all individuals with individual needs. Some of us are special needs and varying special needs. So they need to have more diversity in the programs that they have available to people. And whether it's high barrier or low barrier, well, they should have different sections for that. It is a multi-floored building. They do have other shelters like that in other cities, and it does work when it's put together properly. One of the biggest issues is, especially in the hub space, where they're no longer allowed to sleep, the main two things that homeless need are sleep and food, and not always in that order. Sometimes it's sleep first, sometimes it's food first. But no matter what, we need sleep and rest. And not being able to do that at 310 is pushing people back out into the street, trying to find somewhere to sleep. That is one of the biggest issues. As for the high barrier stuff, if the town doesn't want to see people doing their drugs in the middle of the streets, and personally, I don't agree with people doing their drugs in the middle of the streets. It's just ridiculous. But there would need to be some sort of safe site for this to happen, so it would help clean up the streets, keep everything in one localized area. And for those of us who are out here that don't have addictions and want to stay away from that element, so we can focus on trying to get ourselves indoors, keeping that element away from the rest of us would help us to be able to do that, to get off the streets. And most people don't seem to understand that. At the moment, I think that's pretty much all I have. I was ill-prepared today, and I got almost no sleep last night as well.
Thank you, Mr. Scott. We appreciate you coming and delegating to council on this issue. I will ask if there is any questions of clarification for members of council. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
There being no further delegations, the motion before me reads that County Council receive the delegations from the following individuals or organizations regarding Report 2025-139, Community and Social Services Options for Sheltering Models for 310 Division Street for information. Jeff Wielden, Amanda DeFalco, Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness, Lara Robertson, Dave Scott. Is there a mover? Councillor Jibb, seconded by Councillor Logal. Is there any discussion on the motion? Those in favor? There being none opposed, that motion is carried.